If you're just tuning in, this is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We're talking to Willow King and Anna Scollin, the team behind the new Mindful Living Collective effort. Jeremy Flynn is also with us in the studio. He's been working with Willow and Anna on the project and has been involved with other sustainability and local produce efforts on the peninsula as well. So a lot of people in Alaska, as we've kind of touched upon, are very connected to their environments and their neighbors. And there's a lot of love for Alaska-grown and Alaska-made products. But of course, as you know, a global community, we live in this age of convenience and instant internet gratification and Amazon, where people can order things online or go shopping at any number of the big box stores in town. And that can just feel really easy for some people. I imagine that's kind of one of the things that stands in the way of people living more sustainable lives. Anna, in your experience, has that been true? Kind of what do you think are the obstacles, from the day-to-day for people who maybe want to live more sustainably or are aware of kind of their global footprint, but maybe are, you know, wary to take that first step?
I often think when I find myself frustrated, just that maybe trying to think of how to say this in not a too frustrated way.
A little frustration's okay.
But on the days where I find myself kind of disheartened, like we are fighting an uphill battle, I am reminded of a stat or that I heard somewhere. So don't necessarily quote me on this, but I'm sure that it's out there on the internet. But we operate 95% on a subconscious level. So many of us have been buying groceries and buying the things that we need for a long time, many years. So we have a lot of habits built that we just don't think about. And it can be overwhelming sometimes to think of them all at once. So like you realize one and then you realize another and then you get overwhelmed and then you get stressed out and then you kind of revert back because it's just too much to take on all at once. So I try to say the refrain on a regular basis, like you choose one thing and you do that one thing until it becomes a habit. And then you go from there. But I also find, so that's one kind of way to get around that obstacle or over it. But I also find that when you have the ability to tell the story behind the thing that you are buying or selling, when you can talk about the farmer that grew the turnip and how much he loves these turnips and how cool they are and the history of the turnip and all of those things, I find that it, humans operate on stories. And so when they have a story that's attached to that turnip, then it's in their brain forever, as opposed to when you go to Fred Meyer and you just like mindlessly grab things. Fred Meyer is great, and I love Fred Meyer. I don't want to say bad things. But anyways, so I guess that those are kind of my two things. I think choosing one thing at a time and knowing the story behind the product is really important. So
that's really interesting about stories. I mean, you know, how do you kind of, do you guys have a vision for how you will connect folks to those stories within, you know, the store that you have? I know in the goods right now, you have great placards and signs and there's ways for people to kind of get a feel for that. Is there, do you guys have a kind of vision of how you're going to connect people to those stories when they're kind of coming into shop?
Well, we try to tell the story on a regular basis through social media, the ways that we kind of reach people when they're not currently at the store. And then because our store is so small, it's really easy to have a conversation with people when they're talking or when they're there shopping. As we expand. We hope to, you know, put more signs and things out, but the reality of life is that people don't always read signs. So I feel like that connection, and being able, whoever is in the store, being able to tell those stories behind what's there, how you can use the things that are in the store, all of that, that human connection is really, I think, the most effective way to make that happen.
Sorry, I just lost my train of thought for a second. You know, we were talking before a little bit about food security, and I'd love to talk more about that. You know, Jeremy, you've mentioned a passion of yours is ensuring that the peninsula produces the vast majority of its own food products, which is so interesting. And of course, the pandemic and the supply chain disruptions, as well as you mentioned, those kind of make that need even more apparent. How close are we to actually achieving that kind of, do you have a sense of where we stand right now in terms of how much of the, you know, food we produce is being used and consumed locally?
So unfortunately, I don't have stats because that would take a lot of legwork to put together. But what I do have is, and this may sound anecdotal, but it's not. I remember what Alaska looked like 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, to find a local farm or even a farmer's market or like the Wednesday, you know, market slash festival that we have, or the Saturday farmer's markets or the other ones. I mean, there's a bunch of them popping up, which is beautiful. And the more of them we have, it's almost a testament to the food that is being created locally and the demand for that food. So I think that's beautiful. I think I actually heard some stats yesterday that we're getting about 650 people attending the Saturday market, which is amazing. I mean, 20 years ago, if you told me that, I would probably call you a liar just because it wasn't a thing. So, I mean, right now we are quite honestly growing a relatively small percentage of our own food here. However, we're headed in the right direction, in my opinion. You know, my goal, I've got, as we talked yesterday, I've got, you know, three beautiful little girls ranging in ages from 2.5 to 11. And, it's my goal, and this may sound selfish, that they live in Alaska where at least 80% of our own food is grown right here. And that's possible. I know Alaska doesn't have the reputation for being an agricultural state. And there's some confusion there because, we have relatively new soil in the grand scheme of things. Therefore, it hasn't gone through a lot of life cycles. So unfortunately, our soil doesn't have a lot of nutrients in it. But the beauty of it is this soil is set up perfectly to sequester nutrients. So through composting and through, you know, basically permaculture practices, we can add the nutrients into the soil to produce some of the most beautiful produce I've ever seen in my life. I mean, you could do a farm tour here and, you know, your jaw would drop. It's amazing. So we're headed in the right direction. We have what we need. I mean, we have the summer light cycles, which are amazing. And that is such a gift to have 16 hours of sunlight. So we just need to capitalize that and we need to look at what we have and maximize it.
Willow, you source a lot of your ingredients locally. You know, how would you kind of characterize the way the community of local producers has changed since you started? Or, you know, what is that community like and who are you kind of working with, you know, at the moment?
Well, I hate to be the storm cloud over the sunny day going on here, but I'm kind of still back on the obstacles discussion.
Let's get into it.
Just
yeah,
so,
go for it.
So the lovely tote of radishes and hakurai turnips, and I'm assuming because Jeremy said hakurai, because I say hakurai, the only person that I know that says hakurai is the lovely Mark Boydston, who is the owner of Wilderness Earth Farms and has been a huge part of my supply chain in the last 2 years. And I also received news this week that Mark Boydston sold his farm to a church from Anchorage because he has been overworked and underutilized for the last 3 to 5 years. And so I would say that I have watched people mostly, I would say that a lot of the farmers are the same farmers who have been actually doing this for a really long time. We have some really great historical knowledge in our farming community. But what I want to see change about that is the young farmers, which there are more and more every year. But right now, in the last 2 days, I've learned that Mark sold his farm, and we also lost farmer Don Thompson, who would bring me 40 pounds of tomatillos in July every year. And he would invite me over and show me his beautiful raised beds that he built out of garage door panels so that he didn't have to bend over to work on his crops. And he made compost tea to die for. And we lost him. And we, in the last 2 years, he's produced less and less because he has been less and less able to keep up with what he's doing because there's not a lot of young energy. So I'm actually going to say I have a similar dream to Jeremy. I have 3 children also. Mine range from 13 to 19, and I want to build a community where they can be engaged and where they have a place to produce and be participants. But unless people start adjusting their purchasing process and decision-making surrounding the really important resources that they take up in our economy, we are not going to make any change fast. But the consumer has the most power to make change. So luckily for me, Anna is a beautiful Southern human who is always polite and wonderful and has a lot better messaging to the consumer. Because I'll be like, hey, come on in here and get this stuff. Like, it might be more expensive. It might not. We don't know. But really, there's that lovely saying that if you don't make change, change will make you, or something like that. And I am more coming from a little bit of an emergency mode. Like, we don't have time to trickle our way up to 80%. We're sitting at about 5% Alaskan-produced food, and that is not safe. We need to make these adjustments sooner than later. And right now, I see this opportunity through the Mindful Living Collective to help speed up that transition process and help engage more community members into their own food secure futures. So I don't know if I answered your question, but
no, you definitely
that's kind of where
did.
My brain was.
And that's
so.
That's really interesting, and that's maybe something I didn't think about off the bat, is that, of course, this is extremely important for farmers as well to kind of, for there to be a place for them to sell their goods and to have that visibility. And as you mentioned, of course, you know, having an aging population as we do, important to kind of, you know, bring in, you know, support these folks and have that historical knowledge circulating and bringing in more young people as well. You mentioned also expenses, which is something I wanted to ask you about, because a common refrain I think most people have heard is that maybe it's too expensive to shop consciously, or it's too expensive to shop locally. But of course, that's not always true. And there are ways to shop locally and shop consciously that don't involve kind of breaking the bank. What do you guys usually say when someone brings that up? Who wants to tackle that one? Anna?
Or not.
Well, my initial response, so the thing that came to my mind first was sometimes it is more expensive on the front end. But long term, if we don't support these mindful, community-oriented food systems now, then we're going to get burned later or randomly as supply chains just are cut off at different times based on what's happening in the world. So that's my, I guess, my rather frank response.
Like it's an investment in the future, you're saying.
Right, yes. But I also think that there are ways that you can shop locally that will make it even out in the end. For example, we have produce box subscriptions, and one of our wonderful other collaborations, Joe Spady of Three Peaks, he was putting our produce boxes together yesterday, and he said, so what do you tell people that they are getting by buying their vegetables on a monthly basis? So you pay up front and then you pick them up throughout the week, throughout the month, so once a week. He said, what do you tell people? And we're like, well, we say that they get 11% more if they buy up front. And he said, well, actually, you're giving people like 30 or 40% more than if they bought it at a retail value. So I don't know if that's really all that sustainable for us. But I think that when you invest on the front end and allow us to give you what's available and kind of give the producers slash people like us who are kind of in the middle the liberty to give you what's available, as opposed to picking out the things that are on the recipe that you chose for tonight, I think that that makes it less expensive. But it does, it requires a little bit more flexibility in what you're making for dinner. And it also requires maybe some like creativity, which is great. And who doesn't need more of that in their life?
Willow, do you have thoughts on that as well?
Well, of course. I just wanted to point out, and I'll try to be gentle about this, but corporate buying power and industrial agriculture is heavily subsidized. So when you are buying something from a corporate entity, such as a gallon of milk for $3.50, you're actually not really coming into contact with the real cost of goods sold. When you're looking at a corporate entity that spans a number of states or is nationwide, they can spread out losses and gains throughout their entire corporate structure. So even though it feels expensive to buy Alaska milk at $9.50 per half gallon, which you can get at Maggie's or Lucy's right now, best to at least identify that when you shop in a corporate box store, you're not totally in touch with the reality of what things cost. Just like if you are a small business person and you're trying to produce an item in the realm of what Fred Meyer sells it for, you're probably not going to succeed because they have a completely different way of identifying their prices, their price point. So I just think that we do our best to connect everyone with the most reasonable products available that are locally grown. And also we provide cooking lessons. You know, if you don't know how to substitute things into your recipe for Tuesday night, I like to say that I offer text support. You can text me anytime about any veggie that you receive in your produce box or any recipe that you are struggling with, and I will help you figure out how to integrate it into your meal plan. So I think we're just kind of trying to, like, it's not just sharing the story of where your food came from, like who produced it, but it's sharing the story of like food as a whole and like how it interacts with you and your mental health and your community health and like all of these different aspects that are really, they're hidden from you when you just walk into Fred Meyer's and grab a bunch of bananas. But I guarantee you that even at $1.19 a pound or whatever organic bananas are right now, the farmers that are growing those bananas in Costa Rica or Mexico are not getting a fair price. So it's not like we're really like gaining ground. The corporate shareholders are gaining the ground when we make these decisions. So I just want to help people, not by like squishing them with responsibility, but like at least identifying the fact of how much their dollar matters and how they can start to change the story surrounding their purchases and their decision making, and add, like, we're empowering people to make change, and they just might not have known that they actually had that power.
What you said about text support made me think back to all this conversation about community and fostering a community. I mean, and you know, of course, another part of a community like this are the artists and the makers. And Anna, you yourself are an artist and you have a lot of local art in your store. What are kind of your hopes for how this place could foster a sense of community? Or, you know, what is a community focused on local production and on this kind of, you know, alternative means of consumerism? What does that look like? And what are you kind of hoping to foster? And any of you can take this. I just was curious about that.
I think that we want to engage the conversation lately between Willow and I has been engaging our artists, makers, and entrepreneurs that we work with in the whole project. Because right now, our local folks, they provide us with their goods that they make or produce, but they often do their grocery shopping elsewhere. And so we want to work all of this in together to make it kind of, this is where you sell your stuff and this is where you buy your stuff. I really think it's as simple as that. And it's difficult. It's been interesting to be an artist and also a person who buys and consigns art on a regular basis, because I understand the concerns of the artist of how much do I sell my stuff for, how much is my time worth, how can I sell it to a retailer at a wholesale rate that they're able to then make money off so they can stay in business, but also so that I am not, so that I am not making gnomes at 11 o'clock at night, which is something I find myself doing often. Felted gnomes, that is.
Very, very cute felted gnomes,
right,
I will add.
Right. Thank you. That's a really important part of this system, is creating a model that is as beneficial as it can be for all parties involved.
Do you have any, are there any other, folks in Alaska or outside of Alaska who are doing something in this vein that you're kind of looking to at all for inspiration, or do you have any kind of, you know, role models in terms of other people who might be doing something like this?
I always have my eye out for places like this. I might be a little biased, but the combination of all of the things in one place isn't something that I've seen yet, but it may be out there. I haven't been everywhere on planet Earth. big surprise. But I see places that are... we often check in with Blue Market in Anchorage about their refillery and sustainable home goods and products. They often trade their refillery secrets with us. Like, if you use this PVC pipe, then you can create a pump for your 5-gallon buckets, and you need to do little traps for the soap dispensers and all the things, you know? So we kind of check in with other retailers who are doing different things. But it feels a little bit like they're pieces. There are like pieces here and there at different places, but I haven't found a place that really is combining as many things as we are combining.
Jeremy, do you have thoughts on that as well? Or have you seen, are there any kind of models of this sort of local production and consuming that you've seen anywhere, maybe that you've lived or been?
I've seen, like Anna said, pieces of this, which is great, because then there is a model. We're not necessarily reinventing the wheel here, but we do have other businesses to look at, and, you know, they can kind of model themselves after. And there's one other point I think is very important to make. We've talked a lot about food security, And, you know, sourcing local goods, which is great. But we do have a lot of young people in our community. And we have a lot of people, let's say, between the age of 16 and 50, which is great. That's obviously a wide demographic. But I can't tell you how many people I've met and talked to who are sick of working at some of the big box stores. They feel they're just a number. A lot of people have this creative fire within them. I'm one of those people. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've had a bunch of businesses, and it's a wild ride, and it's a wonderful thing to embark on in life. And I would like to make mention to anyone out there who's contemplating starting a small business. This is a beautiful hub and almost an incubator for you to get things rolling. Whether you want to be a farmer, an artist, you spin wooden bowls, whatever, you know, really, really calls you, whatever your passion is. The creation of this hub, I think, is a key piece of our community. And I think what's going to end up happening is when this takes off, we're going to see a lot of small businesses start up. A lot of local goods are going to be created. And it's really going to boost our economy. And most importantly, anyone who's taken an economics class, you're going to know that if a dollar is spent and held within the community, that dollar goes a whole lot further than if you go to a big box store and you take reach into your pocket and take some of your hard-earned money and pay for any of the the outsourced goods. Those dollars leave the community. They don't stay here. They go, feed a corporation somewhere. So just envision a community where we're producing what we consume and we're recycling and reusing accordingly. But those dollars stay here. And the young voices listening to this, my kids, Willow's kids, they have an opportunity to have their own business and to be entrepreneurs and to be creative and not to be a number in some big corporation making minimum wage. So to me, that's so exciting. And it's just kind of a glimpse into our, maybe optimistic future, but we can make it happen.
That's so interesting. And you mentioned, people who are employed at these places. And I know that in your Kickstarter campaign, you mentioned that having workers who really value the work that they're doing and are treated fairly is important. And that's important to mention too. We just have a few minutes, but Will, before we go, I wanted to ask you, what are the next steps? How can people participate? What kind of is the next, is the time frame for this all kind of looking like at the moment?
Well, how can people participate? At this point, I would say that if any community members hear this and are moved and would like to invest in our Groceries for the Future campaign, that would be a really big help. If you can identify that you can purchase some of your normal day-to-day needs from us, we can put those resources to really good use. We are in the process of building a C Corp, like we mentioned earlier, and that is going to take us a while. We are planning to move out of the Cook Inlet Keeper Community Action Studio by the first of the year. So at this point, we are just heads down. Oh, the rest of that saying isn't allowed. And
fill in the blank. We got it. Yeah.
Mostly, we need the help to continue providing the services and goods that we already provide through people investing in them so that we can be ready for the next ask and engage more people as we build capacity and capital. We'd like to just say, come on in, everybody. I'm ready for you to come make pickles and you to start stocking shelves. But really, we have to finish building our business plan, engage our investors, and act on this corporate structure by the first of the year. So I'm not sure if I captured the ask there, except that consider, if you can't participate with us in an economic way, make sure that you're out there supporting all of your local small businesses and just try to, like Anna said, make one change at a time and just know that it really matters what you do with your time and your money. It's that big, the corporate America doesn't actually want you to know how important your time is, but it's very important, and your money is very important too. So just know that and feel empowered.
Well, that's about all the time we have today. A huge thanks to Willow, Anna, and Jeremy for joining us in the studio today. We'll link to their Kickstarter campaign online at kdll.org. You've been tuned in to the Kenai Conversation. I'm Sabine Fuchs.